Welcome to the Guthrie America Podcast. We sit down with amazing people who do life in our community and who are from here because we believe every story should be told. I'm your host, Hedy Coleman, and today I'm sitting down with William Chandler. Before we jump into this conversation with William, would you please go ahead and subscribe, like, all the things regarding social media, YouTube, all that stuff. Please subscribe. It would mean the world to me. Shout out, ladies and gentlemen, to my friends at State Farm, my guy, Kevin Kraft, who continues to support the mission of having every story told. And also North Church Guthrie. We are sitting in the building currently right now recording this podcast in North Church Guthrie. So I'm so thankful for a church that believes in getting outside of the walls and connecting people to stories with all the things, supporting Red Brick Nights, doing all this stuff, being in schools. I'm so thankful that I get to be a part of North Church. And one more shout out to Heath Shelton, the photographer, for capturing behind the scenes. I believe storytelling. My major was photography when I was in Lansing. Well, I didn't major completely in it, but I was taking photography classes. I just love photography. I think it's one of the best ways to capture a story is through print. And the print can tell so much. And so, William, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
Yeah. So my best friend's last name is Chandler.
Really?
Yes. Michael Chandler. And so Chandler name has a little... special to me, so
yeah.
And William Chandler, though, it sounds like you're Sean Payne.
I've been saying that my entire life. funny thing about the name too is there was a girl one time. Her first name was Chandler.
Okay.
And I tried to convince her. I was like, if we got married, your name would be Chandler. Chandler. You know, just for the name.
Just for the name.
Just
we're gonna get married. Just and then if you want to, you know, within 6 months we can do it, and there won't be a sure divorce.
There you go. But I'm just glad that you didn't do it. She said no. Okay.
I'm glad you did do it. So, William, tell me how your friends and family would describe you. Like, if I was to sit down with your wife, whoever, if I was to sit down with somebody that is close to you, how would they describe you?
I would say the first thing, man, I don't know how my wife would describe me. But first thing would be, especially like my coworkers, I try not to take life too seriously.
Okay.
And that'll be the first thing. I can usually make a joke out of about it, anything.
Okay.
For whether that's good or bad, I have no idea. But that I'm pretty sure everyone that actually knows me would probably say that right off the bat.
Okay, you're a jokester.
If humor is just something that, I mean, it just brings people together.
Yeah.
And I love it.
Now, yeah, I think one of the things that I learned early was either regarding females, especially when you're young, you're trying to make good impression on girls or whatever.
Of course.
You either be an athlete or you can make, you're being funny.
That's it.
You know, if you were one of those, if you were both,
oh, yeah. Cake.
You were.
But you got it. That's right.
But if you're one or the other, that always felt like the person who can make them laugh or, you know. I think the athlete part is cliche, but yeah.
And I mean, when people see me and my wife, they're like, you know, how?
How?
I made her laugh. Here we are, two kids later.
Now, are you one of those guys, like, you all are having a serious conversation, and you crack a joke, and she's like, this is not a time to be funny?
Yes, yeah.
Okay.
That now, I've gotten better. Through some years of training and
training by her
that her biggest thing is I got my humor off a lot of like TV shows and listening to like sports radio growing up and kind of just stuff like that. And so her biggest problem is when I do a joke more than once.
Oh,
that's where she's like, if you need to either be original,
yes,
come up with something different, you know.
Okay.
Other than that, she's right there laughing with me.
So okay.
She might say, you know, she gets annoyed by it, but...
She likes it.
She likes it.
She's digging it.
She's feeling it. She digs it.
Tell us your wife's name.
Wife's name is Mary.
Mary. And how did you meet Mary?
I met Mary... So, I originally met her when we were both in the kinesiology department at UCO.
Okay.
And so, we both had a few classes together. She had a boyfriend at the time. And so, I always knew, like, who she was, but, like, we never really talked. And then about, is it 2016, I think, we'd already graduated, or she had graduated, hadn't, like, talked to her or anything like that. I happened to be walking out of Topgolf the exact moment she was walking in, just with one of her friends, and we just happened to cross paths, and we're like, oh, like, I know you, and you know me, and so I just said, hey, and gave her a hug. That night, she slid into the Facebook DMs and just said, it was nice to see you, and then, and I pull him up every now and then, and like, show her, and I'm like, anytime someone's like, hey, who was interested in who first, I got the proof.
I got the proof.
We just started talking, and then here we are.
Now, whenever you walked away from that moment, even though she slid in your DMs first, were you thinking like, I need to figure out how to?
No, because I just thought she was out of my league.
Oh,
like I, honestly, like she's a beautiful woman, yeah. And so I was excited that she just remembered me, yeah. And like who I was. And I was just happy to get a little side hug and
yeah.
Go on about my way. And I didn't think that she like... And so as soon as she messaged me, I was just like, oh, just trying to craft up the perfect message to try to make her, you know...
And did you reply right away?
No, right away.
Did you really?
Yeah. It was probably against like advice.
Yeah.
Yeah. But no, as soon as I saw that, I was, you know...
It worked out for you though.
It did. It
yeah,
did.
Yeah. But normally you gotta wait.
You gotta wait.
A day maybe? And then you shouldn't even open it, because I think once you open a Facebook, that's reading Facebook. I'm like, I've never opened nobody's Facebook message.
Yeah,
they can see that you read it or not.
That's the
and
thing.
Once you read it, you're like, oh my goodness, now they know I read it.
Yeah.
I don't want to respond to this.
Yeah. Well, and the funny thing about it was, when I read back on some of the messages, we were talking about this the other day, and it was, like, I would read back, and I wasn't lying in the messages, but I definitely, she would be like, what kind of music do you like? And I'm like, I like country music. And she's like, oh, I love 80s country. And I'm like, me too. And I mean, there's a few songs, you know, but I was just like, yeah, how much I love it. And then, you know,
yeah.
I told, and then she figured it out eventually.
For sure.
It worked out.
So was it ever a moment she's like, man, I haven't heard you listen to any 80s country music yet now that y'all are together.
Yeah. Yeah. Eventually she was like, you know, you said you like country music. And I'm like, oh, I do. And she's like, well, how come you never heard of this band or like this era? And I'm like, you know, just must have missed them.
Yeah.
Must have missed them.
They passed me by.
They
but
did.
I think too, like, I can say I like R&B or I can like.
Yeah.
And, you know, it doesn't mean that I'm listening to it all the time or keeping up. Like,
yeah.
Some people are diehards
when
it comes to music and going to concerts and all that stuff. So, So what, the day that you decide, hey, I'm going to ask this Mary to marry me, what was that like? Like, how did you ask her?
So, the funny thing is, the when I realized we had been dating for about, I don't know, probably a year, year and a half. And she went on a trip with her best friend. Her best friend lives in Panama City, in Panama City Beach in Florida. And so it was like a 2-week summer trip. And she was teaching at the time, so she had the summer off. And I was thinking, oh, wow, like these next 2 weeks, like I'm going to hang out with the boys. We're going to golf. We're going to just hang out. Like just, I was going to have a nice couple weeks, not like break, but just of, you know, like, because we hung out and went on dates all the time. And that 2 weeks that she was gone, I remember just like, I remember it hit me one night. I was just like my best friend is gone. Like as much as I love hanging out with my friends, but I was like, I don't want to not see her for a day.
Yeah.
And so I knew right then, like this, I'm going to ask her to marry me. And so the day I decided to do it, the hardest part of the whole thing was I met her parents for lunch one day, and I remember when I was texting them to ask them to see if they want to meet for lunch. Like, I'd never done that before.
Yeah.
And so I've never asked her parents to, like, go on a private lunch.
Yeah, yeah.
So as soon as I texted them, I did a little group text, her dad just responded. I said, hey, would you guys want to go to lunch? And we set it up, and her dad just responded, okay. And in my mind, I'm like, he knows. Okay, he knows exactly. And that whole lunch, I mean, I'm sweating bullets. We're making small talk, talking about our dogs or talking about just something. And I had no idea how I'm supposed to lead into this whole, hey, I want to marry your daughter.
Yeah.
You know? And so finally got it out of the way. And I mean, they're the best in-laws in the world. And they were more than happy and supportive. And then the big one was I had to ask Mary, you know?
Yeah.
That was the next one. And so at the time I was serving over at Life Church in Edmond.
Okay.
And so I asked one of the pastors there, I said, hey, I was like, I got this crazy idea. They were having baptism weekend. And I said, do you think it would be possible if after baptism, I said, I don't need any like big production, but I was like, I'm going to try to like trick Mary into coming up here just for some, I was up there a lot. So she wouldn't have been surprised by it, but getting her in here. And I was like, I'm going to ask her to marry me here. And not only did he say yes, but he had members of the tech team stay. They created this huge slideshow on like the big screen. We got some like her, some of her favorite songs. And so she went to an OU football game that Saturday.
Okay.
With one of her best friends, and her best friend was all in on it. And so after all the services were done on Saturday, we got it all set up. And then I told her, I was like, hey, I need you to come in here, and there's something really cool that like I got to show you. And she just, not knowing anything, just walked on in. And then I asked her.
That's cool. Was her parents and stuff there, or just...
Her parents and my parents were waiting back at my parents' house. Okay. So we were going to do a little thing after. But no, it was just me and her and then just a few friends that were already there. Yeah.
That is really
cool. It was fun.
Where's she from?
She's from Mustang originally.
Okay, Mustang, Choctaw, okay.
Yeah. Cool. And like she grew up in Mustang before Mustang is what it is today. I mean, a lot of times we'll go back and she's like, this was not here. This was not here. Uh-huh. So she kind of, we both kind of grew up, like me growing up in Choctaw, her and Mustang, before they were what they are now, which is great. Love seeing community grow like that.
That's super cool. Now, let's talk about Choctaw.
Yeah.
You grew up in Choctaw all your life, graduated high school there, everything. What are some things that, for somebody, I've never been to Choctaw.
Yeah.
I think I may have drove through it. It's right past, is it Midwest City or what? You take 23rd?
Yeah, you can take 23rd all the way east and you'll hit Choctaw then Hara. Yeah. So.
What is it like I would need to know about Choctaw?
What do you need to know about Choctaw? Like if you're going there today.
Yeah, if I'm going there today, like what stands out? Like if somebody says, man, I'm going to Guthrie, what do I do? Mm-hmm. You go to Hoboken, go grab some chocolate from Rick's, you know. Like what do y'all got going on?
There's I don't even know if it's there anymore, a German restaurant.
Oh, yes,
Choctaw does Oktoberfest.
Yes.
But there was a German restaunt that is... I've only eaten there like a couple times, but I've got to be honest about that. But there's a German restaurant, and then right next to it, it was called Tasty Burger.
Okay.
This little kind of mom and pop restaurant, kind of cafe. Delicious.
Nice.
Like, I don't know where they get their food. I don't know. Do they have God bless it first? However they do it, it works.
Yeah.
It works.
I've been to the German restaurant now that I'm thinking about it, because my mother-in-law is German.
Okay.
And so we used to go to the German restaurant. Yeah. That was a big deal. I wonder if that's still there.
I want to say I saw something in the news. There's been a lot of things in the news about Choctaw. Yeah. So
that's cool. Yeah. So did you play sports or anything like that? What was it like growing up in Choctaw for you?
Oh, it was great. I mean, we kind of lived like a little bit east of like the actual town of Choctaw, kind of more towards Hara.
Okay.
But, I grew up playing football, basketball, baseball, just kind of those three sports. It was a really great place to grow up. I'll never say anything bad about like how I grew up. I mean, I got to know, had so many just like different groups of friends in high school when it came to sports.
Yeah.
Football was when Choctaw was, we were probably the worst in like Choctaw's history.
Uh-huh.
I think my senior year we went 1-9.
Oh.
Which we did beat UConn. So
Nice.
Saying it.
Is that brutal to go 1-9? What brutal. Is it? Yeah.
Because you're everyone's homecoming. Oh. Everyone schedules you for homecoming.
Like just like the coaches have to know. Like I'd be like, no, I'm not coming.
Yeah. Well, and like one time we played Jinx, and that was back before they had this 6A split.
Uh-huh.
And so we were playing like Jinx. We were playing some of these schools that Jinx brought. This was the rumor. They brought their JV team. They had 100 players on the sideline, and they beat us by about 40.
So oh my goodness!
It was rough. And I mean, we were one of the smaller 6A schools at the time. Yeah. So, in basketball, we were decent.
Yeah.
And that was always basketball. What's funny is football was like physically probably my best sport, but my dad was a high school basketball coach at Del City, played college basketball. My brother played college basketball. And so I just grew up around and like falling in love with basketball. Mm-hmm. So basketball was my favorite sport. Mm-hmm. And so, and we were decent. I mean, we had some years I was there, but never like state tournament level, nothing like that.
Choctaw was probably more at that time, probably still is, but even though it's growing, more of a bedroom, like kind of, Mm-hmm. Guthrie was for the longest time. Yeah. It probably still is a little bit, where people just live there.
Yeah.
Like, they do all their shopping in Oklahoma City. They mm-hmm. worked in Oklahoma City.
Yep.
Edmond area. You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
And so that's where I get a feel for Choctaw. That's what I thought Choctaw was like.
That's 100% what it was. Like, yeah. My dad worked down in Midwest City and kind of right there on Oklahoma City. Yeah. My mom was a teacher at the high school there.
Okay.
So I got away with nothing growing up.
So,
nothing.
So you're getting ready to graduate high school. How you end up at UCO?
Okay. To go to that. So I went to, right after high school, I went to Missouri State University.
Okay.
In Springfield, Missouri. Spent a semester there. Just decided it wasn't really for me. And kind of the big kicker was, I was still 18. I decided at that time to join the Army. And so in April of 2008, so right before my 19th birthday, I joined the Army, and it was the Army National Guard. And so as soon as I joined, for about the first year, I went to Rose State. And within the first couple of years of being in the Army, I was deployed over to Afghanistan. And then when I got back, that's when I hopped over to UCO.
Gotcha.
Yeah. With.
How long were you in Afghanistan?
It was about 10 months.
Okay.
Yeah. I think we were deployed because we had to go. We did about a 2 or 3 month train up. So it was about 12 or 13 months total, but actually in Afghanistan for about 10 months.
Wow. Thank you for serving our country.
Thank you.
Yeah. Tell me about Afghanistan. Like, were you just staying on base? Or did you get out and see anything? Like,
yeah.
Just the normal kind of life, or was it just all about military stuff? Like, what was Afghanistan like?
Number one, it's beautiful.
Okay.
I've traveled a lot around the United States, but not really other countries, but it's probably one of the more beautiful places on the earth that I've seen.
Okay.
Just, we got, where we were at was kind of like northeast of the country, and I mean, just beautiful mountains and streams and just, I mean, it was, where we were at was a pretty, kind of pretty hostile spot, mm-hmm. which we kind of walked in not knowing exactly what it was going to be like. At the time, right before we left, I got switched on to a sniper team. And I mean, I always tell everybody, I was not a sniper. I was too loud. They wouldn't let someone as loud as me be a sniper. Too big, too loud. But they did allow me they gave me the big machine gun and said, hey, this fits you well. So you protect the sniper teams and we'll just say you're on a sniper team, you know? And,
is this the big machine gun you carrying, or is it on the one of the trucks?
Carrying.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't even remember what it was called, but there's, like, once we got over there, it was a machine gun that I had. We were used to, like, training on, there's a huge machine gun, and then there's kind of like a smaller one that you can take into battle with you, and this one was like a hybrid of both of them. It was smaller than the big one, so you could like fire it on your shoulder, but it still shot the bigger bullet. But it was bigger than the small one. So
gotcha.
It was weird. We got it when we got over there.
You had never used that?
No. Yeah. They were like, hey, it works pretty much the same. So
Here you go.
And
now, when you say you were protecting the snipers, you were like standing over them, near them. What is that like?
So I would say like the main thing we did. So if like the infantry units around us, if they were going to go in and kind of clear out a valley, so they were going to go in and like go door to door, check for IEDs, different things. Our main role was the night, either a day or 2 days before, we would get inserted by Blackhawks into the valley, usually on like a mountain ridge or somewhere where we would climb up to a certain spot. And there would be about 10 of us up there.
Okay.
And so there would be, usually within that 10, there's two snipers, two spotters, and then the rest of us are just security for them.
Gotcha.
And so while they're observing everything, we're just kind of pulling making security sure to, around
okay.
them. Mm-hmm.
Man! Yeah. So some of my favorite movies are like, I'm trying to think what would be a good one that they do that kind of stuff. Anyway, I love those kind of movies.
Yeah. No, yeah, yeah. And yes. It was fun. I mean, I met some people there that, I mean, are going to be part of my family for the rest of my life.
Yeah.
And the crazy thing was the interpreters that we worked with, for the most part, like, we fell in love with them, and they kind of become part of your family too. Like, yeah, you try to keep in touch with them. And then when the big withdrawal out of Afghanistan happened, there's some crazy stories that of us trying to help them get out. And there were two main interpreters that we worked with, and again, it's a long, crazy story, but both of them are in the United States now.
Oh, wow.
And we were able to kind of provide them with, you know, just like transportation or some money to get them started. But we had one interpreter who escaped with, him and his wife escaped with the clothes on their back. Wow. And we're just kind of stuck in limbo wondering, are we going to get to come? And there was a lot of us that like tried to contact senators and stuff like that to give specific names and stuff like that. And even one we had, there was an actual operation to go get him, because they were scared that the Taliban was actually looking for him. So they actually got to send some, some Delta Force operatives to actually get to his house, get his family, and then get him out.
That is crazy.
Yeah.
And you were how old?
When I was over there?
Yeah.
21.
21.
Yeah, so I was there like from 20 to 21.
Got you.
Yeah.
That's still young.
Yeah, I know.
I can't imagine taking on that kind of responsibility at that age, you know?
Yeah. And that's the great thing about the Army is you're told what to do.
Yeah.
There's not a lot of thinking for yourself. So luckily I had some of my really like best friends now are like my squad leaders and stuff. And luckily they were good.
That's a great way to put it though. Like, mm-hmm. I didn't have to think about anything. I was told what to do. They set my day up, my schedule for me.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
For the most part. And so I guess it's easier because I'm thinking about me having to be over there just making decisions for myself.
Yeah.
But in that kind of situation, I guess it is a little bit more designed to where, regardless of how old you are, you know how to follow directions.
Yeah.
And if you didn't, you probably wouldn't be in the military very long.
That's exactly right. Yeah. You aren't making it out of boot camp.
Yeah. So you come back, you go to UCO. Mm-hmm. Now you said kinesiology. I can't say the word very well.
Kinesiology.
Kinesiology.
Just the physical education department was mostly what it was.
So were you doing that to become a teacher at some point?
Yes.
Okay.
So my original, and I mean before I went to Yale, when I first got back, I'd worked in the oil field. I'd worked as a personal trainer for a little bit. And then through a disability program with the VA, I basically got, they were like, hey, if you want to go to school, we will pay for everything. Mm. So tuition, books, give you a new computer. We will support you until you make it through school. However long it takes, whatever you choose, just come up with a plan and then we're going to cover you. And that was a huge blessing. But I originally went for physical education. That's where I met Mary and in that department. Well, then I switched over to history education.
Okay.
Because the funny thing is, when I was in high school, I had, like playing sports, I had a lot of history teachers that were also coaches. And they were great. Probably not the best teachers in the world, but as I found out, it's a daunting task to be really good at both. Uh-huh. But there was one coach that I had, and he was our history teacher. And I mean, I remember he would almost make history come alive to us as kids and as high school students. And he just like, it's like something was implanted in me by this guy, this teacher, that like I was so enthralled by just the way he taught. And I knew I always wanted to work with kids in some fashion. And I was like, I want to do that. And so from then on, like those matters, as much as I tried to go work in the oil field, go work this job, go do this, something always led me back to teaching.
Yeah.
And like I knew it. So that's why when I finally switched to history, that's what I graduated with, was a history education degree.
Got you.
Mm-hmm.
So you're in school, you're doing student teaching, all these things. Now, you got married after college, or were you still in?
I was still... We got married in April. I was still in college.
Okay.
Yeah, we got married in April of 2019.
Got you.
And it's easy to remember because that's my wife gets mad because I always say it was the greatest weekend of my life. I got to marry my best friend, and Tiger Woods won the Masters. Not in that order.
No,
okay. Again, that's one of those jokes where I say it a lot, and she's like, Okay, let's move on. Yeah, let's move on. It was funny the first time. Yeah.
We did that one. What? So you do that, you graduate, mm-hmm. student teacher, all that stuff.
Yeah.
And then you go into teaching.
Mm-hmm.
Like at this point, when you're getting ready to go into teaching, now you're a student teacher, so you've already been in the classroom.
Yeah.
But tell me about the first time you're in a classroom and it's just your classroom.
Oh my gosh. I think I have a video of it.
Did you?
Yeah. Because one of the things was, if you're, whenever you teach a lesson, you need to video yourself so you can go back and reflect on it. And oh my gosh, I remember standing, and it was during COVID, so I had a mask on,
uh-huh.
and I was so mortified. I thought, like, when I was watching myself, I'm trying to teach, I'm saying like or so, I mean, yeah. just all those little filler words, which I still probably do, but I could tell, like, my hands were shaking, just because that first time was absolutely terrifying, to like just have a class by myself and have all the eyeballs on me, because again, it was during the time when they were just coming back from COVID, uh-huh. from being out, so they were quiet at that time, because they didn't really know how to act, and so you were there to lead the entire thing. Now they're comfortable and they just don't ever stop talking, and you can loosen the classroom up pretty quick, but
yeah,
man, that first time.
Yeah, it's brutal.
It got the heart pumping. Yeah.
What? Now you've been teaching for how many years now?
This is my fourth as an official teacher.
Fourth official year.
Yep.
What have you learned over the 4 years that maybe you never thought of before you started teaching?
I mean, I would say the main thing is, you have to get to know your students on an individual level.
Gotcha.
In the sense of every student, like, you can go in with a plan, and I mean, I'm sure if any of our admin are listening, always go into it with a plan. You have a good plan set in place. But what I've learned is, I mean, different classes and different students are going to react different, and you've got to be able to basically meet students where they're at and adjust. I mean, it's like that in sports,
yeah.
too. It's each team's going to be a little different, and you've got to be able to go in with a plan, be confident in that plan, but be ready to adjust that plan.
Yeah.
And so that's been the biggest thing, the hardest thing, and the biggest thing with just teaching in general for me.
Yeah. Yeah, I like that. And I'm grateful for a teacher who's willing to say, hey, you know what? I got to adapt. Not all students are the same. Not all classroom groups are they going to be the same.
Yeah.
So how do I adapt to make that happen? I love educators and the work that y'all do. What is some of the keys to manage? Because I know classroom management is a big deal. Like, that's a big part of it. And I just heard you say you make some adjustments and all that. But what are some other keys to classroom management for you?
I mean, the biggest key, and I'll fully admit that I am not the best at this, but making sure your expectations are known right off the bat. Mm. Like the procedures, expectations, just working with middle schoolers in general, if you do not start with that and you know, get that down to a T, it can set the tone for the entire semester. If you don't, it can set the tone for the entire semester in a negative way. And there's been some classes that I've done really well with that, and been able to get that down in like the first couple weeks of school. And so from then on, they know the expectations, but it's also allowing me to not have to worry about that as much and start to actually get to know them and kind of get to knowing what their personalities are like, how I can best educate them in whatever we're doing. And some classes where I did not stress that, it's still a battle. Like, I'm still constantly, every day, I'm trying to reverse what I should have done at the beginning.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, again, it's part of the learning process.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, how many classes do you have?
You're
teaching the same thing, right?
But no. So, I graduated with a history education degree, but I went and took, I went through a lot of the physical education classes and the kinesiology classes, I actually went and took the state test for physical education and then got offered a job in the PE department at Deer Creek.
Okay.
So now I'm teaching a class in the PE department.
Gotcha.
Mm-hmm.
So did, but like, so let's say that you have six classes. That's six different groups of students, right?
Yes.
So you're seeing how many different students a day?
A day, probably around 100.
100.
100, and then not counting the athletics portion.
Gotcha.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, 100 different students, yeah. So I'm just thinking about, one of the things I always say is like, teachers have so many people that they're impacting that a lot of people don't get to impact that many people,
mm-hmm.
right? And so that's one of the things that I think is super cool about your job. And you haven't been teaching long enough. One of the questions I always ask, like, have you been teaching long enough to where students graduated and then they ask you to come to their wedding or something?
Oh,
like
yeah.
That? Do you look forward to some of that stuff? Do you think about that stuff? Like, man, one day I hope to see this kid again.
I think about it a lot when it comes to athletics. Like, some of the groups that, like, really my first, like, actual full athletic group, they're 10th graders right now.
Okay.
And so I've got, like, 10th, 9th, and 8th, and 7th. And there's some groups where I'm like, I cannot wait to get to go, like, I mean, already starting to, like, go watch you guys play in high school and kind of see how you guys develop and then go to your graduation. Yeah. And 'cause I've gotten to know not just them, but it's what's so great about sports is, like, I've gotten to know them on a different level than you know students in the classroom. And then I've gotten to know their parents, whether good or bad. I've gotten to know their parents. So I'm just, I do think about that. I'm just excited to see. I've already been asked, oh my gosh. I've already been asked by a few, like, are you going to come to my wedding one day? Or, hey, are you going to come to my first pro game one day? And I'm like, look, you make it to the pros?
Yes.
Yes, I will be there.
You give me a ticket?
Give me a ticket.
I am there.
Yep.
I am there. Yep. No, one of the things, like, being a pastor of a church, like, mm-hmm. kids who are in our North kids now, like, we've been doing this 8 years now, so I've been able to see some of those kids now graduate. I mean, even my own son, like, now I'm getting to see him graduate, but he grew up here at North Church, and so it's really cool to get to see those things. Or then when they come and ask me to marry them, I'm like, man, this is really cool. I got to see them grow up and invest in their lives in a special way, and you get to do the same thing. Teaching versus coaching. What are the differences? Is there some similarities to it? What do you enjoy about one over the other?
It is huge differences. Huge differences. Just the way you have, like, your students interact with you, especially coming from, like, the PE department, the way, like, your normal everyday class interacts with you is, and how, like, the discipline side of it, completely different. I love doing both. Sometimes it's hard to find that line because, I mean, I'm just a big believer, and it's hard to be the best that you can be at two separate things. Because in my mind, these are just almost two separate jobs at times, just because a lot of work goes into creating a really good teacher, and a lot of work goes into creating a really good coach. And so it's tough to find how much time you need to spend perfecting your craft in each one of them in order for you to be successful, and not just, I mean, like, what's your record on the court or on the field, but, like, what you're wanting to see out of these kids. Because teaching middle school, I always say, every time we have parent meetings, and I always tell them, when it comes to middle school sports, there's two things that are the most important thing in my mind. And I said, they're the most important thing at the very same time. And number one, it's winning. Like, I want you to learn how to win, how to lose, but build a winning culture. And number two, I want to see your skills develop. Like, I want you to develop your skills for going into the next grade or going into high school, however. That's kind of the same in the classroom is, when they come to me, especially in the PE department, there's certain skills that I see at the beginning of the year when we do certain units. And I always want to see, whether it's like catching and throwing, just everyday life skills, I want to see, like, and I love it because it happens a lot, and sometimes you just get caught off in, like, I'm not doing a good enough job, and then you see a student that they started the semester out, like, in a certain skill, like, a minimal skill level, and you just see them slowly progressing, mm-hmm. and it's just, the funnest thing about that is going and pointing that out to them.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, remember in the beginning of the semester, you couldn't throw the ball 5 yards,
yeah.
you know? And now look, you know, just some little examples like that are just kind of what, they go a long way.
Yeah.
They go a long way.
Yeah, that's good. Let's talk about Guthrie. You moved to Guthrie.
Yeah.
Tell us how you ended up in Guthrie, America.
Well, I mean, firstly, growing up was when I think Guthrie football was winning state championship after state championship. I remember, I want to say I was in high school, and I remember like Kai Staley.
Yeah.
He was, I remember just, and I, so the biggest part of Guthrie to me was The Rock.
Yeah.
And I tell everyone it's my favorite venue in Oklahoma.
Yeah.
Like I just love, there's just something about it that is just like draws people to it. Yeah. And so anyway, so that's my growing up, like, because Choctaw was a little bit bigger than Guthrie, so we never got to really play him growing up. But man, when me and my wife got married, we were living in Edmond. And we had our first child, and we kind of had some serious talks about, like, okay, we want to move somewhere that we're going to stay and be a part of the community. And so we had talks. We talked about Mustang. We talked about Choctaw, Jones, and then talked about staying in Edmond. And we just decided, number one, as much as I have so many, like, friends in Edmond that I love, and it's great, we didn't want to raise our kids in Edmond.
Yeah.
We weren't from a town or a city like Edmond that big.
Yeah.
And we loved our like upbringings. And so we were like, you know, we want to go to a town similar.
Yeah.
And we don't want, you know, it's just kind of what we were wanting. And so my wife one day said, well, what do you think about Guthrie? And I was like, well, I mean, I mentioned The Rock, obviously. Yeah. It was like, you know, I was like, I wouldn't hate, you know, going to watch some games
at
the
football. Yep.
And so my wife was looking on the realtor app one day, and the house that we bought, it was on the market for one day. And my wife just happened to be looking at the app that day. She said, hey, what do you think of this house? And immediately we jumped in the car and came and looked at it. And it was just, it was perfect.
Yeah.
It was perfect. That's it was in our budget. It was perfect. And so I was like, let's go to Guthrie.
Let's do it.
And the funny thing was, once we got up here, my wife works downtown Oklahoma City.
Okay.
At a charter school down there. And so we got up here, and after about a month of living here, we looked at each other, and I was like, my wife works in Oklahoma City. I work in Deer Creek. We go to church in Edmond, and we live in Guthrie. I was like, this is not, we are a part of, no, we have a small foot in four different communities, but not one.
Yeah.
And so our main priority was, all right, you know, like, we can't switch jobs, you know, until something comes available. So we were like, our most important thing was, we want to be a part of the community in Guthrie, find a church, and start planting our roots there.
Yeah.
And start there, get our daughter plugged in, and to whatever church. And so that was our first priority, which eventually led us to North Church.
Yeah, that's so cool. What is something, now that you moved here and kind of started doing life here, what is something that you enjoy the most about Guthrie?
Man, I mean, again, my wife is an old soul. She music, arts, all of it. And I mean, just the celebrations that Guthrie does.
Yeah.
Are, to me, they're second to none. Even just the Red Bricks Nights.
Yeah.
I mean, something that I know in the summer they do like once a month.
Yeah.
But like, we just love getting out downtown and just meeting new people. I mean, I love golf. One of the coolest things about Guthrie is there's 2, 4, 5 golf courses in Guthrie, and all of them are really cool. And so, and we just love, I mean, the parks.
Yeah.
I mean, I know this might be stuff that's found everywhere, but there's just such a small town feel to a lot of people, but there's a small town feel to it.
Yeah.
And so that's just what we love about it.
Yeah. No, that's what I always tell people. I think it's like the center of Guthrie, I don't think we can grow that much bigger, like the city limits. I mean, I guess you probably could get more houses in the city limits, but I feel like it's going to stay the core of what we have here and stuff. And so I really like our downtown and all that stuff.
Yeah.
But yeah. I really love the small town feel. But my wife and I, even though we're from Guthrie, that's how we ended up. We were living in the city. We were like, hey, if our kids are going to, if we're going to raise kids, let's get them into a smaller community, a smaller town. And so we looked at Piedmont, we looked at Norman. Norman was a little bit bigger than what we thought it was at that time. And so it's like, why don't we just move back home?
Yeah.
And so we moved back to Guthrie in 2007. Yeah. And man, it's been one of the best decisions for us. And so,
yeah.
All right, I got a few questions I'm going to ask.
Okay.
Let me get these questions here. Guess America questions. Okay, these are some either or
kind
of things. Coffee or tea?
Coffee, all day.
I don't. No questions asked. Dude.
Coffee. I respect tea.
I respect tea.
But
I respect tea. Can you be a teacher and not drink coffee? That's what I'm trying to wonder.
You know what? My wife doesn't.
Oh, wow.
And I've...
But she's not teaching now.
What?
Is she teaching
now?
Yeah,
she teaches
now. She's still teaching?
Okay. Still teaching.
In Oklahoma City?
Oklahoma City.
And what school is she at?
Yeah, it's called John Rex Charter School.
John Rex, okay. Yeah, when you said downtown charter school. Wow. Yeah. Okay, early bird or night owl?
Night owl. I have no idea why I hate it, but my mind and body come alive at about... I think the main thing is now because we have two kids.
Uh-huh.
We have an almost four-year-old and an almost four-month-old. And, I mean, my wife, if she could, she'd go to bed at 8:30 every night.
Yeah.
But there's something so... After working with kids all day and then having your own kids, there's something so precious about that 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. time frame. I mean, I have an Xbox. Yes. I love to play. I have a golf game on there.
Okay.
And I will sit there and mindlessly play that, watch a movie, watch an episode of The Office, something. Yeah. But
you appreciate that time. You value.
I value that time.
That 9/11. Yeah.
But unfortunately, I do still have to wake up early.
Oh, yeah.
So I just teach. Yeah. Just run on a little less sleep.
Yeah. What's one thing on your bucket list?
I think one of the big things is, I mean, eventually, hopefully, I would really love to go to Israel.
Okay.
And go visit all the holy sites.
Gotcha.
That's just.
Would you rather travel to the past or the future?
Man. It's hard because there's things in life that I regret.
Uh-huh.
And so I would love to go to the past and change that, especially like my pre-Jesus days.
Yeah.
But it all led me to where I'm at.
Yeah.
And uh-huh. I wouldn't change that for the world. So I guess take me to the future.
Take you to
the future. I'll go to the future.
You know, you may be the first person to ever say go to the future. Everybody's always talking about going to the past.
Again, I mean, I would love to change some things that I did in the past, but...
Let's go future.
Let's go future. Yeah, let's go future.
Yeah. If you could be any animal, what would it be?
Tiger.
Wow. Like, had you thought about that?
Oh, yeah. All the time.
What is it about the tiger, Will?
I love...
Tigers are cool.
They're just cool.
Yeah.
They're beautiful. Yeah. They're just... I always told my wife, like, the first thing I want to do in heaven, after talking to Jesus and worshiping, I want to pet a tiger. I don't know. I never got to pet a tiger. So ferocious animal.
A ferocious animal that's not going to kill you.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can wrestle with it.
Come on.
What's the one superpower you wish you had?
Fly.
Fly?
Yeah. I thought about that one a lot, too.
Yeah.
I mean, I know, like, my wife, I bet she would say, like, be invisible or something cooler. But I mean, I've had so many dreams where I fly.
Yeah.
That I
just... I
want to fly.
Yeah,
I want to fly.
I'm with you. Call or text?
Call.
Wow.
For many reasons, call.
Okay.
I need to hear your voice.
I think you might be the first person to say call.
Really? I told you I'm weird.
In a while. Maybe not. You may not be the first person. Okay. What's the best piece of advice you've ever received?
Don't be an idiot.
Was that from Mary?
Yeah. I mean, multiple. No. I'll say this, and this was during my training days, and there was the head trainer we had. I mean, you could see every single detail of every muscle on this guy's body. I mean, when he was like showing you a move and saying it works this muscle, You can see that muscle, no matter where it was at. You can see that muscle. And, I mean, just had all of this knowledge. And I caught him one time. He was looking up something or watching some video. And I was like, what are you doing? He goes, well, I'm trying to see if this move would be better with this. And I'm seeing what this guy has to say. And I'm like, don't you know everything? And he said, the moment you stop, especially like being a teacher. So he said it applies everywhere. It was the moment you think you know it and you stop learning.
Yeah.
You're going to start regressing.
Yeah.
He's like, never think you know it all. Always be willing to get advice from others, take criticism if need to be, but like always be, if you're truly trying to help people change, then you'll always keep learning.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, that's...
Heath, are you the same way with photography? Are you still learning?
Oh, yeah. I think probably over 1,000 hours a year of continuing education.
Oh, wow. Yeah, and you've been doing photography how long?
Since I was 13.
Wow.
Been paying taxes since I was
28. There you go.
Years.
Yeah. I mean, that's awesome, man. Yeah.
Yeah. No, keep learning.
But yeah, I mean, but this, I mean, this changes daily now that it's digital. I mean, digital photography changes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure.
Now, can I ask you, like, as a pastor, what is the best pastoral advice you've ever been given? Like, when it comes to leading a church, what do...
You know, I don't know if I got this from somebody or was the Holy Spirit. So, one was to always look in the mirror. So, when working with people, just always be mindful, like, I don't have it all together either.
Yeah.
And that's been, like, life-changing for me because, and it's probably something that I'm always teaching other people, too, is, like, when it comes to people, don't put so many expectations on them.
Yeah.
Because what happens is you end up being disappointed.
Yeah.
And I think that disappointment is what leads to burnout.
Yeah.
Because you just keep setting yourself up for failure.
Yeah.
And I always tell people, like, the Bible tells you people are no good. Like,
yes.
Our hearts are not good. And we keep setting ourselves up for failure because we put people on this pedestal. And the expectations is all about disappointment when they're not met and stuff. So.
Okay. And, like, Jesus calls us sheep.
He calls us sheep.
The worst thing you could call us? Like, sheep. That's great, though.
But that's probably the... And it's been great. Like, that's the reason I think I enjoy doing the work that I do so much is because I don't have these expectations for people. I just want to serve them and love them. Now, I want the best for people.
Yeah, sure.
Right? I want people to do the right thing. Just for myself, I want to do the right thing. I probably have said this up to myself several times now, but... I eat stuff that after I finish eating it, I feel why did I eat that?
Amen.
And I keep doing it.
Keep doing it.
I just why do I eat stuff and I'm asking myself the healthy stuff? Like if I'm doing the right thing, eating the healthy, I never say, why did I eat that?
Yeah.
Now I may say I didn't want to eat that, but I never have a disappointment in doing it.
Yeah.
And so.
No.
Yeah.
That happened to me over Thanksgiving of 2020.
Yeah.
I got COVID and I had no smell or taste. And I still overate at Thanksgiving. I was like, what is the point of this? What? I'm over here eating cheesy potatoes. I'm like, I could just eat gluttony. Celery if all
yes,
I wanted to.
Yes, yeah.
I'm like, what a sinful person to, for no benefit. I'm just.
You're just doing it. It's just crazy. It's just so crazy. What's something you're most grateful for?
Oh, my family.
Yeah.
One of the things that my wife and I have prioritized, and I mean, this is something that's not changed our marriage because we've been married for like 4 years. So I know this helped is every night we've prioritized praying with our girls.
Yeah.
And so it's been something, even if we're gone, we call and pray. And I remember the craziest thing was when Mary and I started praying together, because it wasn't until we were where we were married, where we even started this, it was the most awkward thing in the world. Mm-hmm. And I was like, why is this awkward? Like, I'm sharing my life with this person, but I'm like nervous to pray in front of her. And I mean, I know there's a lot of reasons for that, but just being able to thank God each and every night for even, this is what I love about praying, like when we make it a priority, she will be so mad at me sometimes. And I know it. I know she's annoyed with me, but she's still, if it's her turn to pray, she's got to pray. And it is so, and like same with me, it is so hard to pray for someone and just still be mad at
them.
That like, it just, but it's just, I'm so grateful for a wife who, I mean, she, all of my dumb ideas, she just goes right along with them.
Yeah.
And she's just, and then my children are just the best.
Yeah.
We got a 4-month-old baby that just smiles all day long, cries, and does all the normal baby for stuff. Sure. But and my 4-year-old, she's crazy.
Yeah.
But the best kind of crazy. I mean, drives us insane, but I thank God every day for the
girl. That's so good. So good. Now, have y'all been here long enough to have a parade spot?
Okay. Like, yes. Now, okay, the thing is my wife and I are very different. My wife, she would love to have a parade spot. I don't care. I want to travel because new people are different. I like to go meet new people. My wife does not. She likes the circle. And so, is it the music?
Yeah. There's Territorial Museum? Oh, music?
No, in the downtown. There is, or by the Licorice Guy store.
Music. I know what the Licorice store is. It's probably by the YMCA.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, kind of across the street from there.
Oh.
Somewhere right there. The Fiddle Shop.
Where it used to be.
We've been there, yeah. We've been there at that spot for a few parades now.
Okay.
Gotcha. It's been a good spot.
Gotcha. Yeah, it's pretty amazing. Everybody has a spot. It seems like. Yeah.
That spot's bad because if you got a north wind coming at you, you're done, man. There's one year it was freezing. It's miserable.
Yeah, I need to get in between some of those buildings for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. So we have this thing where community wins.
Yeah.
When you hear community wins, what do you think? What does that look like for you?
I mean, I would say one of the most important things anybody could do in life is be a part of a community.
Yeah.
I just, life is too hard to do it on your own. And I mean, obviously as a Christian, I believe it starts with your foundation being in Christ, but the people, when you just, the word community, I mean, whether it's the people in your neighborhood, the people at your church, a combination of both, or the city that you live in, like if you are a part of a community, your sense of purpose goes up in your life, your health, everything can follow that. But I just community.
Yeah.
I mean, that's in a nutshell, that is the to me, one of the more single greatest things you have to do in life.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially as a believer, I just think about the body of Christ, which is very community spoken. Like, we're supposed to be working together to build each other up.
Yeah.
So, we have these signs, throughout town, and when you see Choose Guthrie, what does that mean to you?
I mean, just like the same with community. If you choosing Guthrie, it's choosing a community.
Yeah.
You know? Again, I mean, there might not be 100 million different things to do here, but if you get plugged into the community in Guthrie, I mean, our neighbors are our best friends now.
Yeah.
One of our best friends.
That's cool.
Then our other neighbors, by them, are my parents. So, you know, they are what they are. No, they're great. And then our other neighbors, I mean, we know them well. And it's just coming out here and getting involved in the community. And we go out and do things and we've met other people. But Guthrie's just a place where it's, again, like we've talked about, there is a small town feel. Whether you like it, whether you don't like it, there's a small town feel.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of people, and like even as a church, there's a lot of people to reach in the community. Yeah. I mean, whatever your goals are in life, I mean, you can reach them here.
Yeah, that's good. Be a part of it. Yeah, but I think earlier too, when you said, "Hey, we work out of here. We don't work here. I mean, we don't work here. We, you know, you mentioned several different things.
Yeah,
we're not." And so, but she's like, we got to figure out how to make this happen. Like choosing a church here, doing these kind of things. And I think oftentimes that's when I think about choosing Guthrie's, like you're intentional about doing life here. And so, so that's cool. Well, thank you so much for spending the time with
thank
me.
Thank you, man.
This is good. Yeah, this is good. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for hitting that play button for another episode of the Guthrie America podcast, where we're on a mission to have every story told. The question is, will yours be next? What's here? Go in. Thank you, my friend.
Thanks, brother. I appreciate you.